In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast. Texans Colts on Sunday at noon. Should be fun. Go see the fellas today. The afternoon guys are out in Katy at Buffalo Wild Wings. They're out every Thursday and every Friday. This football season. Yeah. Do it. We're going to
I stepped on the time. What time are they out there, cowards?
2 to 6. The afternoon guys are at Buffalo Wild Wings in Katy today. So head out. If you're out that way, head out and see them. But they're out there. They're on the road every Thursday and Friday this football season. Yeah, Thirsty Thursdays and Football Fridays, man. So we'll have. I'm sure that schedule is up somewhere. I think I saw it on social media. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, go see the guys today. Get you ready for Thursday Night Football, Ravens and Chiefs. So man, the Athletic was cranking out the anonymous people rankings of things yesterday. Boy, were they ever! The NFL decision makers' predictions for the upcoming season. 27 prominent decision makers, coaches and executives, were asked the same 7 questions throughout training camp and the preseason. And the Texans show up a little bit in here in one of the questions that we'll get to. But before we get to C.J. Stroud, Seth, these are the voters who, in my opinion, are required to unmask themselves and get out from behind their veil of anonymity because they were selections that must be explained. Yeah. Again, 27 anonymous coaches and executives answered these questions. There was one that voted for Saquon Barkley for MVP this coming season.
Oh, so listen, no matter how much you look, people know that I was kind of down on Saquon Barkley as being somebody the Texans should target for various reasons. So, and very unpopular opinion by me, I know. But I will say, regardless of if I was the biggest Saquon Barkley fan in the world, thinking that a running back will be or should be the MVP in this day and age is absurd.
Yeah.
Absurd.
On a team that's been to a Super Bowl in the last 2 years and a team that's got a ton of offensive weapons on it already. I mean, Jalen Hurts is a better pick for MVP than Saquon Barkley. So I'm not saying it can't happen. It's not impossible, but it's just one of those things that's so outside the box. You must show yourself. And at the very least, you can't brag if he actually does win it because you picked him under the veil of anonymity.
No. This is the argument I would make on his behalf, though. I could see an avenue by which Christian McCaffrey would win the MVP. Mm-hmm. If you do something all-purpose, because with Saquon, it has to include, with running backs these days, it's got to be in both the running and the passing game. And if the Eagles unlock and really tap into, I don't even want to say unlock, tap into his potential as a receiving threat while he also does something on the ground, I could see it happening. So I would not fire that guy based on this one opinion.
Okay. I don't want to fire him. I just need to know who he is. It's such an outside-the-box opinion. You can't hide behind the anonymity. I got a couple more. The two guys who did not have Patrick Mahomes among their top 3 quarterbacks you would build a franchise around.
That's either Andy Reid himself because he wants credit, or which is very unlikely.
That would be funny. You know, like,
He's like, I could do this with 10 of these quarterbacks in the NFL. He's not so great.
Yep.
Or it is somebody in the AFC West that's like just, Antonio Pierce or somebody. Like, no, screw him. Never. Never. I hate him.
It's the only valid explanation, man. Like, how can you not have Patrick Mahomes in your top three that you would build a team around is insane.
Especially because you consider these days with the way quarterbacks don't get hit, Pat Mahomes will probably, if he chooses to, play another 10 years. Yeah. No problem. Like, yeah. What's the over-under on years remaining for Pat Mahomes? I would say it's somewhere around 10 years.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. He's not even 30 yet, is he? I'm not sure. He's probably...
He's like 23.
He came in 2017, so he's in year 8. Yeah, he's probably 30, like there. But yeah, I would say I'd put it at 8.5, and I would pound the over on that. The only thing that would keep Mahomes from playing another decade is if he wants to spend more time with his family and he feels like he's accomplished enough. Like physically, again, barring like his knee getting, just turned at a 90-degree angle, he'll physically be able to do it for a long, long time, I think, for sure. I need the other voters, I need to unmask themselves. Whoever voted for Kyle Hamilton as best defensive player in the league, I'm not angry at you. I'm really just curious who voted for him for that. And it makes me a little sad that we don't have Kyle Hamilton on the Houston Texans. That's
I wonder, did they have a quote on that one from the guy that voted for him? Because I think that the one with Kyle Hamilton is his versatility and what they're able to do with him, kind of the way you hope that Jalen Petrie can do some of the versatile things that Kyle Hamilton does. It does unlock a lot of things, especially Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator last year. That's another big storyline tonight, is new defensive coordinator for the Ravens. He was able to do a lot of funky stuff. He loves to, they load up the line of scrimmage with those simulated blitzes. And when you can mess with your safety and you've got a super athletic one, we've seen this before with both the Ravens and Ed Reed. I think to a lesser degree, but similarly with Troy Polamalu in Pittsburgh, it's a lot of fun for a defensive coordinator. Yep.
I guess I should just to
but you're right. Oh, is MVP, is league MVP?
Best defensive player in the league, which is still, I think I love Kyle Hamilton. I think he's a great player. That might be a little bit of a reach. By the way, the winners of these categories, I'm talking about who I want to unmask themselves. Patrick Mahomes was a runaway winner among the 27 voters for MVP. He had 18. The next closest was Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson with 2. Which is basically like saying Patrick Mahomes or the field, kind of in a way. And I would take the field just based on the voter fatigue, if nothing else, I guess. I mean, Lamar Jackson is the reigning MVP of the league. And the starting, this is where the Texans show up. The question that I talked about of the top three QBs you would want to start your franchise from scratch, where two of these guys actually didn't vote for Patrick Mahomes. CJ Stroud finished second behind Mahomes in this. So the voting went 25 guys had Patrick Mahomes in their top three. 16 had C.J. Stroud in their top three, followed by Joe Burrow at 13 and Josh Allen at 10. So that's noteworthy. Like, C.J.'s number two behind Mahomes there.
I think of those three, Josh Allen would be the one that this is an easy cop-out, but I do question and wonder sometimes how well his game will age because of the physical punishment that he takes, and but there's also a part, I think if you're an executive, you look at the Bills, and they've never really given him a supportive rushing attack. They'll rank up there in rushing yardage, but mostly because Josh Allen does a lot of damage
he's a
with
big
his
part
feet.
Of that,
so I don't know. It's different than, Roethlisberger took a lot of abuse and everything, but he also, his mobility wasn't his calling card, whereas with Josh Allen it is.
Yeah, Myles Garrett, best defensive player, 13 votes. Next closest one, Micah Parsons with 5, and then Nick Bosa, TJ Watt, Kyle Hamilton, Max Crosby, Chris Jones all show up on the radar. The other thing that I need, the last voter I need to show himself, the one voter who said the Texans will be a surprise team in a bad way this year, just because I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just a little angry at you. That's all.
I don't begrudge anybody for that. I'm honestly kind of surprised that it was only one. Usually this time of year you start to see the contrarian opinions more often. What is a bad way? I think if you're assuming that everybody just has the Texans penciled in as a playoff team, then just having a mediocre season probably could could be what that guy is talking about. The one I don't want to skip over the one other one you had listed.
Okay,
was
yeah.
Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three voters picked Bo Nix for best rookie season. Yeah. I think Sean Payton was definitely one of them. And I don't, honestly, I'm not hating on the kid. I just don't under, I honestly, I do not understand why people would be so bullish on him after the preseason, just because a lot of the stuff he did in the preseason was classic. Oh, okay, versus a vanilla look. Yeah, the kid's athletic. The kid can make some off-platform throws. He does some impressive things. But, man, is he all over the place. He's... I don't think it's going to go well for him this year. It doesn't mean it's going to be a disaster, but I will be, and I'll own up to it, but I'm going to be really, really surprised if Bo Nix is, like, offensive rookie of the year or anywhere close to it, because he's sloppy, man. He's erratic with his footwork. He makes sketchy decisions, which is okay versus backup defensive players, but it's got all the hallmarks of a guy that looks good in the preseason, and then you realize you come back to earth a few weeks into the regular season.
Yeah, yeah. I love that you said Sean Payton's probably one of the guys that voted for him. I could totally see him doing
which,
it, that's why.
Truth be told, Sean Payton, like he does with all his quarterbacks, unless he has no option to, I think he probably hates him.
Yes.
Yeah, he hates everybody except Drew Brees, and I think that probably took like 4 years for him to stop hating Drew Brees. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's kind of wired that way. He's got that John Gruden in him, I think. Yeah.
I think one indicator, we had a texter come after us, but saying like, hey man, you guys seem awfully optimistic. You're making me nervous, this and that. Hey, it's not just us. Okay. The Athletic did their inaugural NFL hopometer. They literally gave you a chance to speak on this, faithful listener. If you were an Athletic subscriber, you could go to theathletic.com last week and vote on what your optimism level is for your team. Are you optimistic or are you not optimistic? It was a simple question. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about your team? It's not just me and Seth. The Texans had the fifth highest hopometer rating on The Athletic. This is empirical scientific stuff, man. This isn't Seth and I out here dishing Kool-Aid to all of you and candy to the kids, all right? They were fifth.
Don't worry, everybody. Hey, yeah, we're part of the mob, okay? Yeah. And never the mob thinking never goes awry. So just know that we're in the mindless majority here that never leads you astray.
Right. It's not just us, man. 96.4% of the voting constituency of Texan fans, according to The Athletic, are optimistic. Fifth. The only cities that have more gumdrops and rainbows and puppy dogs going on right now are the Green Bay Packers at 97.1%, fourth. Third, the Chicago Bears, 97.6%. Second, Kansas City, 98.7%. And then the most optimistic fan base is the Detroit Lions at 98.8%. So we're fifth, man. We're fifth in the hope.
The Lions... There's a little bit of, Billy, a lot of the teams that have been down a little bit and now have a realistic glimmer of hope are very, very optimistic. Yeah. They're getting drunk.
Yes.
This is their 21st birthday.
Right.
The Texans amongst them.
Right.
You know, like the Lions, the Texans. What's down bad for the Packers, I guess, you know, a little bit. A couple of years of turmoil.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
But it makes sense that they would also, they are drunk on the optimism right now. They haven't gotten grizzled or calloused. So that makes sense. I do think the Bears, I've stumbled across more than several Bears fans that have referred to themselves as contenders. I don't know, man. Like, as in Super Bowl contender? Like, it's just saying as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, amongst the teams that are contenders, I'm like, all right, it's okay to be optimistic about Caleb Williams and everything else. I don't know if I put you right there in the contender list just yet.
I think there's two things that work with that. That's really interesting because, you know, someone whose opinion I respect quite a bit, it may anger some of the audience because I think even though he did this show for several years, anytime you bring up Nick Wright's name, we'll immediately get texts like, I hate Nick. I love Nick. Nick has the Bears. He did his tiers of teams yesterday on First Things First. He has the Bears above the 49ers and a few other teams. He has the Bears way up there. Now, as Nick always does, he's got a very detailed and well-thought-out explanation as to why. This isn't just him waving a Caleb
That's
Williams
why he's so annoying.
Propaganda flag. He's good at his job. Yeah, he's good at his job. But he laid out how easy their schedule is. And obviously, they've done a lot of things to shore up that roster. You know, with it's not just drafting Caleb Williams. Ryan Poles has done a good job kind of getting that thing moving in the right direction. I do think it's a reach, but he brought up some good reasons for it. So I think there's two things going on. One, the NFC is just not the AFC. The NFC is the conference where we are ripe to have kind of an out-of-nowhere thing happen. It's just not as deep. Like the Eagles are generally thought to be like the third or fourth best team. They were a dumpster fire at the end of last year. They were awful at the end of last year. So I think the NFC is just generally thought to be easier than the AFC. And I think the other thing too, Seth, I think we have CJ Stroud to blame for this a little bit. I think now if you draft a quarterback really high who looks capable in the preseason and who was very capable in college and has all the necessary arm talent and brain talent, And talent around him as well. Like, I think the Bears' talent around Caleb Williams is thought to be much better than the talent around CJ was going into last year. We knew by the middle of last year, we knew the Texans had talent. I think CJ's season last year kind of puts a maybe subconscious barometer in there for teams that have highly drafted quarterbacks.
I think when it comes to the entirety of the, let's remember, it's a team sport, Sean.
Yep.
Some might call it the ultimate team sport. Mm-hmm. I think people are assuming that the Bears have a really good defense. It's another thing I see people casually mentioning. They're like, "Well, yeah, but they got to really like, no, this is not 1986. They weren't actually a good defense last year. So it's not just a given that he's going to have a good defense on the other side of him as well, despite the improvements, etc. So I also do think, and just as it was with Bo Nix, look, I've done a couple of reaction videos to Caleb Williams where I allowed myself to get drunk on the highlight reels, and I all of a sudden I've got a bunch of YouTube followers that think I'm a Bears fan, like Bears fans that have followed my channel, and boy, are they going to be upset in week two. So, but I think Caleb Williams, I think the potential is obvious and it's very real. I do think that he's not wired just right yet to be at a CJ Stroud level his rookie year on the finer aspects of the game. I think there's still a little bit more freelancing to his game. There's a little bit more of risk appetite in a bad way. And I'm less sold that he's capable of really pulling off something incredible. I think he'll do some really impressive things, but I think more in the vein of a traditional impressive rookie season where, okay, boy, he threw for a lot of touchdowns, but there are a lot of things we just got to clean up and turning him into an actual professional quarterback.
Caleb Williams ain't throwing just 5 interceptions this year. Put it that way. Like Caleb Williams is going to turn, he's going to turn the
football. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And I think some of that too, like CJ is very open about the fact that he was really prepared for the NFL coming where he came from in that system with Ryan Day at Ohio State, whereas Caleb Williams is coming from Lincoln Riley's system. He's never under center, you know, like so I think it's just
it was one of the weirdest things where, you know, like, you know how frustrated I get when people start saying you can't draft a quarterback from this school or that school because they don't churn out good quarterbacks. It was extra frustrating with me for CJ because people wanted to act like they didn't realize that the Ohio State offensive system does a lot of NFL things that a lot of colleges don't do anymore, and that it did prepare CJ specifically. There's other quarterbacks at Ohio State that Ryan Day hasn't treated quite the way he's treated CJ. Like, it did prepare CJ very well for the mental side of the NFL.
Yep.
And I think he had a leg up in that regard compared to, Caleb Williams or other guys.
Yeah.
Including Pat Mahomes. You know, Mahomes was very raw mentally coming out of an air raid system. And just it was probably good that he had some time to sit and really learn and absorb the NFL game before he played.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Astro with the most to prove down the stretch. Who is it? We will talk about that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the Astros lose last night 12-5 to the Cincinnati Reds. The years and years and years of failure against the Reds continue last night. Hopefully today they get it worked out. Noon game today in Cincinnati to close that out. And then they come home to the Diamondbacks this weekend. I'll be out there tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to that. Astro with the most to prove. They just put up an article on MLB.com. This is one of the rare articles. Like usually when there's something and the player with the most to prove for each of the 30 teams or the most underrated this and that. And when they do something for all 30 teams, for the Astros, a lot of times it's hard to pick who it is because they've got so many good players on the team. They've got so many compelling players on the team. This one was easy, and it turned out I was right. And it's Brian McTaggart who picks out. He reps the Astros in articles like this, Seth. And the article is, which player on each of the 30 teams has the most to prove down the stretch in September? I thought this was an easy question. I don't know if you've got an answer for it or you want me to just tell you what the answer is.
I would, let me guess.
Yeah.
I would have said, boy, the most to prove. I went to Bregman. I don't think Tucker has to prove anything other than that he can actually walk, but which is big. You know, we can get a motivational, you get one of those really, those emotionally powerful videos of him. You know, walking with the help of the gymnastics parallel bars, yeah. The way they do in therapy and everything. Jeez. Kyle Tucker walks with no assistance. But I think I would go with Bregman because of the free agency situation. And especially that I would extend this on into October, November, if he can remind other teams out there that, hey, this is a guy who shows up in the playoffs if you're trying to get over the hump.
That's a good angle. I like that. It's not Bregman, but I like your explanation for it. It's Verlander, and from a standpoint of he's trying to hold on to his spot in the rotation right now, if and when the postseason rolls around for the Astros, and this is what McTaggart says. In 3 starts since coming off the injured list, Verlander is 0-3, 6.75 ERA, and a 1.7 whip. Like, there's nothing bad luck about this. Like, he's just been wild and giving up good contact and whatnot. He admitted after allowing 5 runs, 8 hits, and 4 walks on Monday in Cincinnati that he needs to get better. The rest of the Astros rotation has been outstanding lately, led by Framber Valdez, 1.59 ERA since August the 1st. Hunter Brown, 1.45 since August the 1st. Spencer Arrighetti, 1.95, that I'm sure went up last night. This was written probably before Spencer Arrighetti gave up 9 runs in less than an inning. And then,
yeah,
Yusei Kikuchi, who got to the team basically on August the 1st, he's got a 2.57. So the Astros, and even Ronel Blanco is 3.38 since August the 1st, if I'm not mistaken. I think that stat popped up yesterday. So even Ronel Blanco, who feels like a clear odd man out in this group right now, kind of, has been good by Major League, you know, not great, but like okay by Major League Baseball standards. Verlander's three starts in, and he hasn't looked anywhere close to the Verlander that they need come October. So I actually, this is the, when McTaggart, when they put this article up, that's the first name I thought of, because Verlander is kind of fighting for his role on this team over the last, over the next 4 weeks.
I guess, you know, and we were very careful when we were talking about who would start game three of a wild card series right now, that it could very easily change based on how Verlander performs over the next month. I guess that two things can be true. I think he has the most to prove, but I also have the most confidence in him that he's been through this multiple times before. I don't worry about his ability to correct short-term issues, mechanics and stuff like that. I worry more about just at his age, whether he's going to hold up physically. So I think you're probably going to see closer to a vintage Justin Verlander over the month of September. And it's just, and maybe all of the discussions. Now, then it does become even more interesting if Kikuchi continues to pitch really well. Mm-hmm. Because then you do go into, okay, health at age, all that stuff. Arrighetti, obviously, right now, after last night's performance, it was a big reminder that, all right, this guy is not a finished product. You hope that it was as simple as maybe he was tipping his pitches. He wouldn't blame it on that, but it's always a possibility. But this is a third time now where he's had a really, really dicey beginning to a game.
Yeah.
He's not yet at the point where you can trust that he's going to pull himself out of it. So I guess, is there anything Arrighetti can do in his remaining starts in the regular season that you'd actually feel better about it? I mean, he had three good starts before this last one. So I don't know if you really can feel rock solid about how he's going to perform in the playoffs.
Yeah, because last night was not, he pitched four innings, got a little trafficy on the bases, and he hit 100 pitches in 4 1/3 innings. You know what I mean? Like, which would have been a little startling based on how he's pitched over the last month or so. He's been really good. He had a 1.95 ERA in the month of August before last night, or since August 1st before last night. That was one of those games last night, Seth, where you're like, oh, okay, this guy can just flat out go lose a game for you, you know, in short fashion. Like when Verlander's bad, it's gives up a two-run homer in the first, walks some guys, but he's grinding and he's keeping the game. Like Spencer Arrighetti was basically just, he was a batting practice machine last night. And to your point, it's happened multiple times this year. Your original question was, is there anything Spencer Arrighetti can do over the balance of the season to make us feel better about him possibly being in this rotation? And look, I guess if he has a month of September where there's no more hiccups like this one, I suppose it would. To me, it's more about Verlander, and I think Verlander, I don't think he needs to get his ERA over the month of September into the ones like these guys are. If Verlander is in the neighborhood, you know what I mean? Like, if Verlander has an ERA over the month of September in the low threes, and he's not, his whip is back down in the 1.1, 1.1, you know, like 1.1, 1.2 range like that. If all the vital statistics are at least like down the street from Fromber and Hunter Brown, Justin Verlander is going to be a starter for this team in the postseason. I feel strongly about that, independent of what Arrighetti is doing, you know?
With Arrighetti, I think part of it, too, is you think about the strategy going into the playoffs, where that's where the piggybacking of Arrighetti and Blanco, and depending on how taxed your relievers are at any given point, that it's... You got to be careful and judicious in how you use him, I think, and you got to be ready to pull him real quick. Hopefully he doesn't give up three runs in his first three at-bats because he's got to face at least three. But he's I think you can't worry about hurting his confidence or anything. You can work with a sports psychologist in the offseason if that's an issue, but I think you look at him as a piggyback guy and you see how the first couple innings go and be ready to throw Blanco in there at any given time.
Yeah.
So one guy that was on here that was interesting that Astros fans might be interested, this list of players with the most to prove down the stretch, Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
Stop me if this sounds familiar. If and when Carlos Correa returns from the right heel plantar fasciitis that he and the Twins initially thought would be a very short-term issue that has instead spiraled into another seemingly endless saga. I mean, it sounds a little bit like Carlos Correa and a little bit like Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
But it's on that same, it's that same leg that had the mysterious ailment that kept him from being signed by two other Major League Baseball teams. That's popped up with the Twins this year.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe it's not related to the mysterious right lower leg ailment that he had that made him unsignable by various teams.
Yeah, yeah. The Giants and the Mets both bailed on 10 and 13 year contracts, or I forget who gave him what, but I think Giants gave him 13, Mets gave him 10, and they both bailed on it. He's on a 6-year deal with the Twins. The thing for Carlos that's unfortunate is that he's having a hell of a season before he got hurt. He hasn't played since July 12th. So for those who haven't been following it, hasn't played since July 12th. This is relevant though, because the Twins right now line up as the team I think that the Astros would face. Either the Twins or the Royals, they're kind of back and forth with the 5 and 6 seed there. But there's a good chance that we see Carlos again in the postseason like we did last year with the Twins. He was having a great season. He was hitting .308. He had 13 bombs. He was on the All-Star team. He was doing really, really well. And yeah, this right foot injury is just the latest in what's, you know, been a career-long issue with medical stuff for Carlos Correa.
He's had a history of mysterious injuries too.
Yeah.
He's almost turned into... He's like the Dior version of Terrence Jones, who always had some weird issue or injury or ailment or something. It was never normal. It was either like he got in a car accident on the way to the facility once. He allegedly kicked a homeless man another time. Now I'm not accusing Carlos of that,
right.
but it was always something. It's just always something.
It's always
with that
something
guy.
With you guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Final segment coming up. We're gonna get you ready for Thursday Night Football tonight. Ravens and the Chiefs. What intrigues us the most? This is a super intriguing matchup. These two teams just faced off in the AFC title game last year, so we'll get ready for that. They had an interesting debate on Get Up too about the Deshaun Watson trade that we need to visit and see what the chances are that it plays out like they were talking about yesterday morning. We'll have that for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Football's back tonight. Real football, regular season football, Ravens and Chiefs. You can hear the game here on Sports Radio 610. There's a ton, like it is every year, a ton of compelling storylines heading into the year. Texans related around the league. We'll hit the Texans and the Colts really hard tomorrow. We hit it pretty hard today. We'll hit it hard tomorrow to get you ready for Sunday. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610. One of the big storylines is Deshaun Watson ever going to live up to what he's being paid to be in Cleveland? They had a pretty spirited roundtable about this yesterday on Get Up, in which ultimately Mike Greenberg arrives at a big conclusion about the Deshaun Watson trade.
You got to be the guy. Like you can't win in this league with a guy who not only played below average. And think whatever the off the field stuff is, the on the field stuff for a guy that you paid all this money to guaranteed has been detrimental to your football team and put them in a real, real bad spot.
And traded so much
get it. But they've done a good job with the roster of trying to get good players around them.
To Andrew Berry, but every game is a referendum on Deshaun Watson and this deal from ownership wanting him front office. People's jobs are on, like, for the duration of this contract, people's jobs are on the line.
It is not an exaggeration to say we are one more bad season away from this having to be listed amongst the worst trades in NFL history. Mm-hmm. It's that level of bad when you consider what they gave up for him and what they paid for him.
Okay. One bad season away from worst. One of the worst trades in NFL history. It's teetering on the brink right now for sure.
100%. Yeah. And they did. Look, they pushed some money off into the future, but it just makes it that much more onerous next year that if
his cap hit next year is $72 million.
And yet I think they're at the position where they're saying, well, we're screwed if it doesn't work out, so we might as well we're pushing all our chips into the table and figure out if we have what we have with them. This is why Kevin Stefanski is so much in danger of losing his job, because whether they think Kevin Stefanski, the head coach, is the problem or not, They're gonna have to see if something else works. Deshaun Watson could be begging and pleading with the owner that no, Kevin Stefanski is awesome. I love him. And if they start off and Deshaun's not playing well, they got to try something different.
Yeah.
So it's not looking good up there in Cleveland.
No.
It's not looking good whatsoever. And then the shame of it is that they do have the roster around him to really compete with, as we saw with Joe Flacco last year.
Yeah.
They've got the roster to compete.
That's got to be the worst part for Browns fans, because they historically, at least in the iteration since they returned to the NFL in 1999, by and large have never had good rosters. They've been a bad team. They've been anywhere from average to really, really bad. They've been 0-16. They were 1-31 over a two-year period, not all that long ago. They've never had a roster like this since they came back into the league in 1999. like, never. And that, yeah. It's the quarterback. And this isn't a situation where this has got to be the most frustrating part. This isn't a situation like, say, the Texans in 2016, where that was one of the better rosters the Texans have ever had, where you had J.J. Watt, and I know J.J. got hurt, but going into the season, you had J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. Clowney had started to turn into something. You had good players on defense. A.J. Boye and Jonathan Joseph were your corners that were really good that year. You had good linebacker play, all those things. And then on offense, you had DeAndre Hopkins and you had Will Fuller. You had a pretty solid offensive line. But Brock Osweiler stunk. And so you were 9-7 and you got knocked out of the second round of the playoffs. This is a roster that's way, way better, the Browns, than that Texans team was, but a quarterback that is, they had to give up a ton for the right to overpay him massively. Like, that's got to be the worst part about it, is like, hey man, this was supposed to be the finishing move on all this, and this is literally what's keeping you from having this roster realize its potential.
Awesome. This is an ugly situation, man.
Yeah.
It's an ugly situation. The owner's hands are all over it. This is, you know, it's not. Now, the owner, he strikes me as the kind of guy that can very easily displace all the blame and maybe forget whichever way he might have prodded it in one way or the other. But remember that they were out of the race and they flat out said no. We're just going to money whip this situation.
That's exactly what happened.
And spend whatever it takes to get this guy into the building. But that's the tough part about it, Sean. And this is where the owner has to be honest with himself. The GM has put together a very, very good roster, other than the small minor detail of the quarterback situation. And ever since he put together that good roster, if they hadn't gone all in on Deshaun Watson, could it have turned out differently? Would they have been better off just sticking with Baker Mayfield all those years? Who knows? But somebody's losing their job over this.
Yeah, it's tough to say.
It's not going to be the owner.
No, it's not the owner. I mean, look, Baker has unequivocally played better football than Deshaun during the period of the last couple of years. Even, like, you know, Baker had the one year where he was just a nomad, where they got let go, and he was with the Browns, and they let him go, and then he's a Panther, and then he becomes a Ram. But last year, he was good. He was pretty good for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Would they have been better off with Baker? Yeah, maybe. I can tell you right now, their salary cap and draft pick situation would have been better off with Baker. They wouldn't have been paying Baker fully guaranteed $230 million and wouldn't have had to just forfeit three first-round picks and some other picks to keep Baker Mayfield on their team. They would undoubtedly have a better overall roster because they wouldn't have had to give up all that draft capital to get Deshaun, you know?
It's a damn shame. Damn shame.
I feel horrible about this. Yeah, I feel horrible. So,
thank God the Texans never had to deal with the Deshaun Watson. That's you know, they weren't at least this version of Deshaun Watson.
This version, for sure. Yeah. What excites you the most about tonight's game that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610 between the Ravens and the Chiefs, the season opener?
I can't even remember what answer I gave you at 6 a.m. when you asked me that question. Mostly I was still drunk. But it was you brought up Derrick Henry. Yeah. And yeah, that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about Derrick Henry paired up with Lamar Jackson. And look, is this self-defeating because the Texans face Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson potentially around Christmas time? Sure. But it's by that point, I hope that Derrick Henry looks like he's 30 years old and maybe he's a mess. Now, Derrick Henry was awesome in the last three games last year of the regular season. Helped the Texans out a little bit, if I recall properly.
He did, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Well, yeah, no, he helped out with the Texans sucking, but then also they beat the Jaguars.
Jags, week 18.
Yeah. So, look, Derrick Henry still, in non-Texans games last year, Derrick Henry still looked very capable of doing some really good things. Yeah. Second leading rusher in the league last year. So, paired up with Lamar Jackson, I'm really intrigued by what this looks like. Also, remember last year, it was weird after the Ravens had revamped their entire offense to be more of a passing-oriented offense and had very good success with it. But also incorporating Lamar Jackson's legs into it along the way. They just completely abandoned Lamar Jackson running, maybe because of the fronts they were seeing, but it just looked a little disjointed and weird. It looked like Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator, kind of spit up in his mouth a little bit in the playoffs. And I think that they probably, after some hardcore self-reflection in the offseason, we're going to see a slightly different offense, but maybe a new and improved one by the Ravens.
It's always funny. Like, one of these two teams is going to be 0-1 after tonight. I mean, these are arguably the two best teams in the AFC. One of them is going to be 0-1 after tonight. I wonder which place will have a bigger freakout factor on Friday if they're 0-1. It sounds weird to say this because the Chiefs are the favorite in this game. Like, they're the better team. And yet I feel like if the Chiefs lose this game, like in Kansas City, it won't be that big a deal losing this game, because I think the Chiefs have kind of taught us. They got a little bit of Patriot to them, where the regular season with the Patriots, as you pointed out when we had Nick on earlier this week, like, for the Patriots all those years, it looked like they were just working out kinks for the first couple months of the season, and then they kind of found who they were as the season wore on. I feel like that's where we've evolved to with the Chiefs, where there's been like multiple regular seasons now where I'm like, this is it. Like, the Chiefs are just a normal team again, and then they flip the switch in the postseason. Whereas I think the Ravens, I feel like if the Ravens lose this game, it's like the next in a line of losses. Like you pointed out earlier, they're 1-4. Lamar Jackson's 1-4 against the Chiefs. I feel like there is a big motivation not to go 1-5 against the Chiefs, you know?
He's 1-4 against the Chiefs, and in a way, this would almost, even though you're as far away from the playoffs as you can possibly get in the NFL regular season, I feel like this will be added to that veil that's over him in terms of not having genuine playoff success.
Yes.
Despite MVP seasons and everything else that goes with it. That, I think this game means more to the Ravens, on an emotional level. I think there's a grudge it's one of those classic situations where they very much look at the Chiefs like their rival, and the Chiefs might be kind of like, all right.
Yes.
We'll add you to the list, I guess, of teams that think we're their rival, but we don't really consider you our rival.
Yes. That's right. They're Boston College to Notre Dame. That's what they are. The Boston College thinks they're our rival, but no. We play Michigan and USC every year. Get out of here, Boston College. John Lopez and Reggie Atatula, they're in the loop. They're in the building. Oh, they deserve it. Turn on your microphone there.
It was.
Okay, good.
I said, that's a drive-by.
Yeah. BC. And now they got Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien did a good job on Monday night.
He looked pretty good.
How you guys doing?
Terrific. How are you?
Great. It's football day, man. It's opening night.
It's happening today.
Yeah. What's your excitement level for this game on a scale of 1 to 10, Ravens and Chiefs tonight?
Oh, it's a 9. Yeah. I mean, these are fun football teams as well. Obviously, the NFL wants you to have that level of excitement. But no, man, there's a lot of fascination with these teams, and particularly locally. These are teams that, if all the hype is right, that you're going to be contending with as a possibility to try and make it to those highest echelons of this sport. So, yeah, super excited for
scouting. Yeah. 10, you're just,
come on now.
I'm fired up, man.
I mean, if you're already at a 10, you have no room to grow, though. Okay. That's the thing. You got to be at like 9.5, maybe.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah.
Hey, I'm 49 years old. It is what it is.
Okay.
That's what I
put that on a t-shirt.
My excitement level is a 9.
It doesn't get any firmer than that.
All right.
That's the
Seth, you're preaching to the choir. My excitement level is a 9 if I just go to the bathroom less than 3 times overnight.
Right. This is my 10, okay?
I'm looking forward to a bowel movement that I've got timed out and should be occurring at about 6 p.m. Yes. based on a binge I had a couple days ago.
That's an 8+.
Oh, man. I feel bad for our guy T Mill. Did you see yesterday?
Oh yeah,
dishing out the betting advice. He's usually really good with the prop bets. Do you bet at all, Reggie?
Oh no, I don't have the stomach for sports gambling.
Really?
No, it just gives me anxiety, and I don't love But I did appreciate. I was listening live to the drive, and I was just super excited at how excited T Mill was. And honestly, you guys played the audio, and I noticed that you guys were talking about how he led Clint astray. I think the forces that be saved Clint Sterner in that way, because T Mill apparently didn't have the capacity to put in his.
T Mill was gonna put it in for Clint,
but he couldn't, and so thankfully Clint is not out that money.
Clint $100,
exactly.
That's good. He's got two young girls.
I'm gonna defend him on this one. That was just to chalk it up to the game.
Defend T Mill?
Yeah,
that's Aggie defending Aggie. Big shot.
No. I mean, Eric Geddy has been like. Ridiculously good.
No, I said that. In all seriousness, when we played the audio, I'm like, it's not. It did. Now I don't know if I would have made it my lock of the month like T Mill did.
Right.
Like, you know, but it wasn't a stupid bet. Like if I were listening to that segment, I would have bet on that. Yeah. I would have bet on Eric Geddy going over 5.5.
Sometimes
strikeouts.
I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but sometimes you make a really solid bet that is just wrong.
I felt like I was on the right side.
Yeah.
You know? And
you end up wearing a football helmet.
And then
all
you end up wearing a football helmet.
Yeah. You end up with blonde hair.
Look. I've lost real money in various things that never could go wrong, like real estate prices falling or anything. That I am completely callous to any kind of feeling of complete and total confidence in a mere bet. Yeah.
Well, I said, Seth,
try to unload Florida real estate in 2008.
Well, you bring this up every time. I love it.
I'm still jaded.
I forgot about that. I'm glad you remind us every once in a while. That's crazy.
I hadn't realized until they said it on the broadcast last night that it's been forever since the Astros have beaten the Reds. Period.
Yeah.
That's wild to me. I didn't realize that. That's crazy. What a parlay that is, man.
Yeah.
All right, you guys got good stuff going on the show today?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be fun. Getting ready for the NFL season.
There's
some big questions that might affect the entirety of the NFL this year. But also, we're just going to start breaking down as much as we can the matchups that we're most interested in for Texans Colts on Sunday.
Yeah.
Andy Kalu joins us.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I probably should have started there. Yeah. That's on me. My Nigerian brother.
Have you met Andy or talked to him before?
We had an opportunity to fully meet in person last week as I'm breaking the microphones in studio.
Don't worry.
And we just had a nice Nigerian brother love fest. So it worked out very well.
Andy's a great dude.
Yeah.
He's a great dude. All right, well, we will get out of your way here. We are done. We are out of time.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob. Dare to compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.